Comparing Lightning and Visa was a good starting point. However, we now believe Lightning will have a much bigger impact than Visa alone. Lightning can replace most other Layer 2 networks that facilitate US dollar payments. These include a variety of networks, such as ACH, MasterCard, Star, Plus, Cirrus, PayPal, Apple Pay, and many others. One good analogy to help understand the impact of Lightning is to follow the evolution of information networks. A fundamental insight is, in the past, walled gardens and closed networks ceased to be relevant over a long enough period of time when an open network, accessible to everyone, was alternatively available. The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. Yo, welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. This is Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got an awesome one for today. Sorry to everybody for kind of lax episode publishing in the last 2 weeks here. A lot of stuff been going on and trying to do some new things, which turned out to be a lot harder and more time consuming than I hoped. But we are back at it, and we're going to have a really, really awesome week. I've got a backlog of some really good stuff to read. Today is one by Nicholas Burtey, B-U-R-T-E-Y. This is actually the first time stumbling across him and kind of the projects, the Galloy team and stuff that they're working on. But they've built some Lightning, a custodial and non-custodial Lightning wallet. And there's some really interesting stuff going on, but they have got, this is apparently the part one of a series, and it's awesome. It's comparing the legacy retail payment system across the globe with Lightning and Bitcoin as a protocol stack in comparison, like the possibilities of using this as global financial infrastructure. And this is something that I've been talking about, and I think is absolutely critical to understanding where we are moving into the future. So we are going to jump right into it. Don't forget, you should be stacking your sats with the price getting volatile again. Don't FOMO in. Price is going to be all over the place. Just stack sats with DCA, a regular auto purchase at swanbitcoin.com/guy. Again, it starts you off with $10 free, and then you will know that you are always increasing your Bitcoin position, and it's going to get crazy again, so hold on tight. All right, with that, let's go ahead and jump in. This is an article posted on Medium, again by Nicholas Burtey, from the Galloy team, titled Lightning as a Retail Payment System, Part 1. To get insights about a potentially life-changing new technology, it is most useful to compare it with other technologies that already exist. Analogies involving things we already know help us make sense of something new. In this way, the comparison allows us to evaluate whether this new technology could have an impact on the world. Our first attempt to make sense of Lightning compared it with Visa. These initial thoughts were previously outlined in this long document, Visa and Lightning, How Do They Compare? After spending 6 months developing two alpha stage wallets, one custodial and one non-custodial, we have developed an even stronger conviction about what Lightning will achieve. Comparing Lightning and Visa was a good starting point. However, we now believe Lightning will have a much bigger impact than Visa alone. Lightning can replace most other Layer 2 networks that facilitate US dollar payments. These include a variety of networks, such as ACH, MasterCard, Star, Plus, Cirrus, PayPal, Apple Pay, and many others. One good analogy to help understand the impact of Lightning is to follow the evolution of information networks. A fundamental insight is, in the past, walled gardens and closed networks ceased to be relevant over a long enough period of time when an open network, accessible to everyone, was alternatively available. Before diving in, we would like to thank Max Webster at Version 1 for his valuable feedback. This article has been written by Nicholas Berte and Chris Hunter from Galloway. We are building payment solutions using the Lightning Network. We'll cover more of what we do in future articles. The current digital dollar system. To start, let's look at how payment networks are built for the US dollar. The dollar is composed of a hierarchical payment system. At the base layer, there is Fedwire. Fedwire is ultimately where all final settlement of US dollars between various financial institutions occurs. Above Fedwire, you have other networks. They include interbank networks, such as CHIPS and ACH, credit card networks, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, ATM networks, Pulse, NYCE, Mac, Time, Shazam, Star, Cirrus, and Maestro. C2C networks, or consumer-to-consumer, Zelle, PayPal, Venmo, and Cash App from Square. There are numerous other proprietary networks, such as the conventional check network. There are scores of payment networks. Each has specific technical complexities, participation requirements, and other unique attributes. It always settles on a base layer. What does it mean for a network to be the base layer? The base layer is where the final settlement eventually occurs. A base layer network is systemically important for a very specific reason. It is not only used to settle transactions between different parties who directly access this network. It also settles transactions that take place on other payment networks, typically after periodic netting occurs. An example, Alice buys a coffee for $5 with an Alley card at Bob's Coffee, a merchant with a bank account at Citi. To settle this transaction, the money needs to move from Alley Bank to Citibank. Small banks typically have an account with larger banks. In the instance where Alley, the bank, has an open corporate account at Citi, this transaction is easily settled when Citibank simply updates its internal ledger. But let's say Alley does not have an open corporate account at Citi. Moreover, let's presume that various customers with accounts at these two banks conduct many transactions during the course of any given day. In this instance, there are two basic scenarios. The two banks, Alley and Citi, can settle each and every individual transaction. This is called gross settlement. Alternatively, the two banks could simply net out the sum total of all transactions completed during a given day. In this instance, they would have only one transaction to settle all payments for that period of time. This is the concept of net settlement. This is what is practically used by most, quote, layer 2 networks. Let's presume that during the course of one day, the following happens. Alley customers owe a total of $500 across 14 different transactions to Citi customers. Citi customers owe a total of $300 across 11 other transactions to Alley customers. In this scenario, these 25 transactions in aggregate can be net settled with a single payment of $200 from Alley to Citibank. It does not matter whether the customers of Alley Bank and Citibank used Visa, PayPal, or Apple Pay to conduct their transactions. When the two banks settle amongst each other, they do not use any of these named networks. Instead, Alley Bank and Citibank conduct the net $200 final settlement on the base layer network. For all US dollars, this final settlement occurs at Fedwire. Net settlement requires some trust, as until the net settlement transaction occurs, one bank owes money to the other bank. Why is Fedwire the base layer? Because Fedwire, an arm of the US Federal Reserve, is the entity that settles all U.S. dollars. As most U.S. banks have an account at the Fed, a Fedwire transfer is essentially a ledger entry between two bank accounts at the Federal Reserve Bank. Fedwire payments are instant and final. For a bank, having a dollar at the Fed is also the best dollar possible. How could $1 be more valuable than another dollar? The answer, in one word, risk. Instead of settling at the Federal Reserve, a bank could have an account directly with other banks. However, there is always some risk of institutional failure. See Lehman Brothers. This risk of insolvency doesn't exist with money held at the Fed. As Chairman Greenspan famously said, there is zero probability of default, as the Fed can always print more money. Why are there so many dollar payment networks, and not just one? Too long didn't read? Because the Fedwire doesn't scale. For people with Bitcoin experience, when thinking about scaling, they typically think about constraints related to the number of transactions per second. Interestingly, the Fedwire has a similar constraint. It does not handle significantly more transactions per second than the Bitcoin network. However, unlike Bitcoin, Fedwire's inability to scale transaction throughput is not due to a technical limitation. The Fedwire is a permissioned system. Only a subset of entities can access it. Accordingly, the Fedwire throughput limitations stem from controls on which entities and organizations can utilize the system directly. As individuals, we cannot have access to the Fed. As a company, we can't either, unless we are a company with a banking license, i.e., a bank. Banking is the most highly regulated industry on Earth. Receiving a bank license is time, capital, and resource intensive, and for good reason. It comes with a lot of responsibilities, as banks take custody of money and also have a license to, quote, print money in a fractional reserve system. Fedwire is the ultimate and final U.S. dollar settlement system, but this network is only directly accessible by companies with a banking license. To facilitate payments between individuals and companies, additional networks or layers have been built on top of Fedwire. This is why other payment networks have blossomed in various forms during the past 50 years. The logos of just a few such payment networks are shown below. With that in mind, there is one element that all of these payment networks have in common. Whether it is Visa, ACH, PayPal, Swift, or American Express, all U.S. dollar payment networks rely upon Fedwire for final settlement. Moreover, you can think of these payment networks as Layer 2 solutions built on the base layer of Fedwire. Regulation has created a barrier to access the best USD settlement system. As mentioned, only certain licensed banks can access Fedwire. Accordingly, other permissioned networks, from credit cards and ATM networks to physical checks and mobile payment apps, have emerged to mitigate this scalability issue. Despite the maturity of the USD payment industry, the market remains extremely fragmented. Dozens of different walled garden payment platforms are widely used today. Why is this? There is a simple, fundamental answer to this question. All of the existing Layer 2 USD payment networks are commercial in nature. They are designed to benefit one specific company or a consortium of companies. Given this dynamic, there is little incentive to create compatibility amongst the various networks. Additionally, each of these payment networks is closed. They all have very specific participation requirements. Oftentimes, these requirements are not even publicly disclosed. It is similar to private intranets, from an era where internet had not yet reached mainstream adoption. This raises the fundamental question: if it was truly possible to have an open payment network, would these dynamics have been different? How does Bitcoin compare to Fedwire as a base settlement layer? The graph below shows a comparison of the number of annual transactions for Bitcoin and Fedwire. From the inception of the Bitcoin network in 2009 through the end of 2019, we can see the transaction values for these two, quote, base layer networks are getting closer each year. Critics of Bitcoin are swift to highlight its infamous 7 transactions per second limitation. But do these critics know that the throughput of Fedwire is not materially different? Fedwire use case. Putting transaction volume aside, it may prove more instructive to explore the use cases for using the Fedwire base settlement layer. These use cases almost always involve exchanging a large amount of money between two parties, typically companies or governments. Examples include a company paying for the goods of another company. You can think of Apple Incorporated paying supplier Foxconn for the manufacturing of its devices. This type of transaction involves billions of dollars every month. It could also be a government, like the city of San Francisco, paying for a private company for an infrastructure project. Example, renovating the Bay Bridge. When a new owner is buying a house, a wire transfer with its finality guarantee would also be very appropriate. For settling layer 2 networks, this is where things become interesting. Individual retail customers use payment networks, such as credit cards or peer-to-peer platforms, for smaller transaction values. That said, the banks and owners of the payment networks, Visa, Venmo, etc., need to ultimately net settle payment at some stage. They do such on Fedwire. Finally, it's also worth mentioning that many Layer 2 networks, such as Visa, operate 24/7. On the other hand, Fedwire only operates during limited hours on weekdays. Given this, Layer 2 payment networks not only enable smaller transaction sizes, but they also allow spending when the Fed itself is closed. Retail payment uses Layer 2. In brief, Layer 1 or base layer payment protocols do not scale. With Fedwire, this stems from a complex regulatory framework. In the case of Bitcoin, the inability of the base layer to scale stems from a technical constraint, the block size limit. These scaling limitations in the base layer do not prevent massive real-world adoption of these protocols. Even with the USD as the most commonly used currency worldwide, having Layer 1 limitations are manageable, so long as the Layer 2 solutions provide the scalability required. Who currently interacts with Layer 1 for the US dollar? Banks, companies, governments, and very infrequently, individuals. This correlates with the average transaction size on Fedwire, which is above $2 million. Given these dynamics, consumers do not directly rely on the Layer 1 protocol for daily payments. They use Layer 2 solutions. In the world of USD banking, this dynamic is easy to observe. Consumers do not have an account at Fedwire. Instead, they have an account at a commercial bank. This commercial bank account serves as a custodial wallet, at least for daily transactions. If we apply the framework of the digital dollar to Bitcoin, where does it lead us? As the usage of the protocol takes off, fees on Layer 1 increase, to the point where the majority of retail consumers would not want to transact on it. Let's assume on-chain fees on the Bitcoin base layer are $100 per transaction. In this instance, it will be impractically expensive for most consumers to individually manage a well-connected Lightning node with a dozen channels. By way of contrast, let's imagine a regional commercial bank managing a Lightning node. If we presume this bank is managing money for 10,000 people, then $100 per on-chain transaction is bearable. In aggregate, maintaining those channels will cost 1 penny per customer. In much the same way retailers use Visa and ACH for daily dollar payments, they will soon use Lightning in a world where Bitcoin adoption is taking off. The US dollar has a lot of Layer 2 networks. There are dozens of Layer 2 networks enabling dollar transactions in the United States, and hundreds of different payment networks worldwide. All of these payment networks are walled gardens. Each of them targets a specific use case. They are not extensible and evolve very slowly. Key considerations and features include fee structures. Because these networks are walled gardens, fee structures often incentivize a multi-year lockup. For a bank, it is not worth the cost of initial implementation and integration, unless they plan to access the network for an extended period of time. Incompatibility. There is no compatibility between these various payment networks. Let's take the credit card industry as an example. MasterCard is not compatible with Visa, which is not compatible with American Express. All of these networks may use some version of the ISO 8583 protocol, which is analogous to a binary XML. However, these card network operators do not necessarily agree on similar tags to use in classifying and identifying transactions. Legacy issues. The reason we have so many payment networks is also historic. In the early days of ATM deployments, each U.S. state or region had its own network. We can see this evidenced through legacy brands such as Star, Plus, Maestro, and Cirrus. Each of these local, independent networks are still being widely maintained today, even as brands like Visa and MasterCard have become predominant. And counterparty risk. Some networks, such as CHIPS, require accounts to be pre-funded, similarly to Lightning. As a result, they are less subject to counterparty risk compared to other networks that must have trust in the other party. Many networks mitigate this issue with a clearinghouse, which shifts the counterparty risk to the network operator. Have you ever wondered why ATM fees have risen to be typically between $3 and $5 per transaction, simply to obtain cash? All of those independent ATM networks need to be maintained. It costs a lot of dollars to do such. The US dollar payment network industry is quite robust. It began flourishing in the 1950s and 1960s. That said, there remains a tremendous amount of fragmentation and friction in this long-standing mature industry. Whether a consumer is using a credit card, accessing an ATM, or completing a wire transfer, there is always a cost involved going to the network operator and different third parties. And there is typically little to no competition on the fees. In fact, in the case of the card networks, there was a competition to increase interchange fees, Link provided. By way of contrast, we now have a wholly new alternative available. An internet-based network that provides true money over IP with a virtually instantaneous settlement and near zero cost per transaction. Irrespective of the value of the transaction itself, this is the Bitcoin protocol layer 1 in concert with Lightning layer 2. Today in the year 2020, virtually anyone worldwide can take part in this network. Lightning is being developed in an open environment, relying on open source code. Given this, there are already thousands of developers experimenting with this exciting new technology. Unlike closed garden networks, compounding innovation will contribute to the general network effect of Lightning. Comparison with the early days of the internet. We like to compare payment networks today with information networks 25 years ago. This video with Bill Gates is a helpful reminder of the state of the internet in the 90s. No one will challenge the fact that the internet has prevailed today, but it was certainly a contrarian view in 1995. The internet has succeeded over the alternative, secured private intranets and AOL-style closed information networks. Why did the internet win over closed networks? Because it is open to anyone. During the past 25 years, millions of developers have made contributions to make the internet better, by launching new products, by making the underlying protocols more scalable and secure. This compounding effect of innovation leading to the success of the internet was simply not possible on private networks, where the layers of corporate and government bureaucracy limit innovation. We witnessed a massive consolidation effect from many intranets and private networks to virtually every application running on the public internet. A similar consolidation will soon happen with payment systems. This begs a question. Does it make sense for a bank to run dozens of payment networks? How long will the existing walled garden payment network subsist? Particularly when there are hundreds of such networks worldwide, each incompatible between the other. This system is so balkanized, financial institutions need, on top of those payment networks, a paid messaging system, SWIFT, simply to be able to allow these disparate networks to be able to talk to each other. Fun fact, Visa, a $420 billion company, still relies on mainframe computers and a messaging system with a standard defined in the 80s, ISO 8583 from 1987. Because so few developers really know about this standard, there is a huge cost to access the network. This is a fact that Visa is monetizing, and payment companies like Stripe use as an edge. Compare this to LND or C Lightning using REST API and gRPC. Millions of developers know how to interact with these endpoints instantly. Additionally, the code is free and open source, so no approval from a bank or network provider is needed to create a proof of concept or even launch a product. The adoption of Lightning will soon grow rapidly. We can envision this growth by highlighting just one company, Square. The company has been a vocal proponent of both Bitcoin and Lightning. A tweet from Jack. Square Crypto is focusing on Lightning. January 21st, 2020. What do you believe will happen when Square enables their millions of merchant terminals to accept Lightning payments? Jack, the CEO of Square and Twitter, has been vocal saying this is not a question of if, but a question of when. Which paradigm will thrive over the long term? Closed payment networks or open payment networks? Bitcoin is an open settlement network. Lightning is a low-cost, instant, open payment network. We believe it is a given that massive consolidation will take place during the next 10 years, with 10x the pace of innovation. Current metrics. How does Lightning currently compare with existing fiat payment systems, or even Bitcoin? Let's first look at how the Layer 2 system like ACH and Visa compared to Fedwire and Bitcoin. We see that ACH has about two orders of magnitude more transactions than Fedwire. Visa has about three orders of magnitude more. Where does Lightning fit into this picture? It probably has a lower transaction volume than Bitcoin thus far. Bitcoin has been running for about 11 years now and has reached a state of maturity and stability that is actually backing up its value. Comparatively, Lightning is much more nascent. While the white paper was released in 2016, the first alpha version was only deployed to mainnet about 2 years ago. Two Bitcoin soft forks had to happen before Lightning transactions were possible. The addition of CSV and CLTV. Lightning is now at a beta stage, but it is progressing very rapidly. Yet what is even more insightful is the fact that nobody knows what the Lightning throughput is, and this is a feature, not a bug. The only metrics a Lightning node can know for sure is the value of payments the node is sending and receiving, and the value of payments being routed through to other nodes. Privacy is at the root of Lightning, which is a requirement for a retail payment network to succeed. It builds on Bitcoin, which does not optimize for privacy, but transparency and robustness. Although it is not top of mind for average citizens just yet, it is likely that people will become increasingly concerned with both companies and governments surveilling their everyday financial transactions. We think the option of a digital alternative that offers a good user experience will help. This means that at some point, Lightning could surpass the throughput of Bitcoin, ACH, and Visa combined without data nerds being able to notice it. Does the price of Bitcoin need to become stable before Lightning adoption can take off? It doesn't. It is possible to use Lightning solely as a means of payment, irrespective of whether the price of Bitcoin is stable or volatile. Lightning can succeed even if people do not necessarily view Bitcoin as a proper store of value. Why is this so? There are several reasons. Lightning is instant. There are many derivatives readily available for Bitcoin. Lightning offers more competitive fees than transactions on the Bitcoin base layer. In other words, Lightning is ready to be used as a means of payment today. When transacting with Bitcoin at the base layer, it is more difficult to hedge efficiently than it is for Lightning. This is because transactions on the base layer can take anywhere from 10 minutes to 1 hour or more before they can be considered to be confirmed. In a similar vein, exchanges often require 3 to 6 blocks of confirmations before allowing clients to trade newly deposited Bitcoin on their platform. In a market that trades 24/7 and where the market can move at any time, minutes of extra delay can have a material impact. Lastly, the higher fees associated with on-chain Bitcoin transactions create a natural incentive to only conduct higher value transactions on the base layer. Compared to Lightning, it's harder to use Bitcoin solely as a means of payment. This stems largely from latency issues and fee structures, all of which make it difficult to hedge Bitcoin dynamically. For instance, a bank might be waiting for a payment worth $10 million in Bitcoin and wants to hedge against the price fluctuations of Bitcoin. If the bank sells a short $10 million worth of Bitcoin on a futures market, such as the CME, there are a number of issues to consider. First, there is a risk of slippage because there is a large monetary value involved. Additionally, if the Bitcoin price is going up but the transaction did not go through, then the short position will have a negative P&L. There would be no opposite position to offset the loss. For the bank, it is possible to see that the UTXO has been sent. However, because it is not known when a UTXO will be confirmed, it is harder to hedge. Paying higher fees to make sure the transaction will be included in the next block helps, but a race to higher fees is not beneficial for a payment protocol targeted to individual consumers. With Lightning, it's a lot easier to properly manage a delta-neutral position. First, because instead of receiving large payments, Lightning incentivizes small payments, and as those small payments can sum up to large payments, because the large payment would be divided into small payments, it's easy to gradually hedge the position, with little to no slippage. Second, unlike with Bitcoin, when a Lightning node receives a payment, the transaction is immediately settled. There is no inherent timing variability on when a transaction settles. Non-custodial Lightning is not for the unbanked or underbanked. Let's play out a thought exercise. Assume that Bitcoin is taking off and has an equivalent role as the Fed wire for the US dollar. In this instance, being able to interact with Layer 1 Bitcoin and therefore Lightning as an individual will be reserved for a limited group of people. This might be a contrarian view for hardcore Bitcoiners, but we believe it is the most likely outcome. In this scenario, transacting at Layer 1 would become costly over time. Even if this cost may not be prohibitive for many US citizens, it would be for most people in developing countries. We can assume that having just a dozen Lightning channels open will cost hundreds or thousands of dollars per year at some point. Despite the anticipated Layer 1 costs and restrictions, access to an open global network would still benefit individuals tremendously, especially the ones in developing countries. Because a bank will provide financial services for many users, their ability to offer an economy of scale in managing liquidity efficiently will make this option appealing for most individuals. Most would prefer to interact with a bank they know and have features like social recovery if they forgot their passwords, or provide a lending and borrowing offering within their community. Peter McCormick has done an interview that highlights the use of a custodial wallet over non-custodial in El Salvador with Blue Wallet and Wallet of Satoshi. In a country where the average salary is $250 per month, the cost of an on-chain transaction is too high even now in a low-fee environment. OpenNode data also shows that Blue Wallet and Wallet of Satoshi, the two easiest to use Lightning custodial and non-regulated wallets, are currently the top Lightning wallet destinations for Lightning payments. As, in all likelihood, the cost of participating in Lightning will still be an order of magnitude less expensive than the traditional banking system, even as Layer 1 Bitcoin costs continue to increase. Lightning and Bitcoin are leveling the playing field. We believe the centralization that has happened in the banking industry could reverse. Union banks would not be at as much of a disadvantage compared to big banks if they could just as easily be a part of this network. A group of friends, a small village, or a community could create their own bank. This is a model of a modern union bank. At this time, it is technically difficult to deploy a Lightning node that can act as a bank for a community. Even with Blue Wallet, open source LNB Hub as a multi-user backend, the features set is still lacking compared to what a typical bank would provide to its customers. But we expect this open source infrastructure to blossom in the upcoming years. From Union Bank in emerging markets to Amazon. The massive benefits will not be exclusive to developing nations. As an example, let's turn our attention to Amazon. Per the most recently filed 10K, Amazon had $280 billion in sales during 2019. Although this is not disclosed, it's fair to assume that a majority of payments were handled via debit or credit cards, with 2% or more of interchange for every payment processed by card on its platform. Amazon incurred multiple billions of dollars of fees simply to accept payment from customers. Imagine an innovative new payment solution, one as international as the internet itself, and with a fraction of the fees of debit or credit cards. This new solution would certainly become of interest to all merchants, from Amazon all the way down to your local coffee shop. This innovative new system will consequently enable novel participants in the network to earn fees in exchange for providing valuable services. The text above highlights solely the cost benefits associated with this new system, Lightning. However, the network affords many additional benefits that we have not even touched upon, from privacy and censorship resistance to finality of financial settlement on the base layer in minutes, not days. Novel participants in this new network will capture massive value for providing services beyond simple fees for processing transactions. Conclusion. During the past 50 years, a multitude of U.S. dollar payment networks has blossomed, from credit cards and ATM networks to peer-to-peer platforms and ACH. All of these networks are closed, walled gardens. Moreover, one can think of them as Layer 2 solutions, built on top of Fedwire, the base settlement layer for all dollars. Similarly, we expect that Layer 2 solutions for Bitcoin, most notably Lightning, will flourish in the coming years. However, unlike traditional USD payment networks, Lightning is open and permissionless. Accordingly, we anticipate that the pace of innovation and adoption will be staggering during the next decade. This post is the first in a series. In our subsequent post, we will explore many more detailed issues. This will include Lightning in a multi-currency environment, an analysis of key factors supporting the growth of the network, and an exploration of how the protocol could be a valuable bridge between fiat currencies. Subscribe to our Medium channel to follow the next part of the series. And that will close out Lightning as a retail payment system. And as made clear, this is part of a series, and I really want to dig into this. This was just an awesome read. I think there's a lot to pull away from this, both good and, you know, potentially bad, but I really want to hit a guy's take on this. So let me get something to drink. I've been going at this without break yet. So let's hit our sponsor real fast and we will jump back in. Again, something I talk about over and over on this show that I want people to think about how this revolution and how this new technology and these networks are going to unfold is under the context of an infrastructure inversion. We are going to basically the systems that build up on an open permissionless network that works in parallel with the legacy system are simply going to have too many benefits, too many innovations, and too fast of development in order for the closed hierarchical networks to possibly keep up with them in exactly the same way as we had the closed television and phone networks, the closed, all the closed and segmented information networks and intranets prior to the adoption of the internet. The internet reached a point where it was capable of doing all of those jobs, where it slowly got closer and closer to that, and then sped past them so fast that there wasn't even time for any of those other companies or networks to even steer out of the way. Like, it just, it feeds back on itself. And the development and stuff on Lightning, one thing that he gets at kind of at the very conclusion of this, by the way, huge, huge thank you to Nicholas for writing this, Nicholas and Hunter. What's his first name? Because he wasn't listed as like the author, so I forgot to mention him at the beginning here. Want to make sure I give credit where credit is due. This is the Galloy team, and again, it was Nicholas and Chris Hunter. Nicholas Berte, Bertie, Bird. Yeah, I don't know how to say that name. I've probably butchered it, but I apologize. Nicholas and Chris Hunter from Galloy. But this was just an amazing comparison between the two systems, like the architecture and the interaction with these two systems, the payment and settlement networks on top of the US dollar, and then comparing them to Lightning and Bitcoin. And again, what I was just getting into is that there was a really interesting point brought up at the very end that this is just a flat one-to-one discussion of the costs of these two networks, how large transactions need to be hedged against, how difficult is it to hedge with Bitcoin. And this is another reason why I think derivatives and futures markets in Bitcoin are actually critically important. So many people just shit all over them, but they have a huge use case in actually stabilizing the value. It's critically important. Like, when you're exchanging an enormous amount of money, just like they said, with slippage, by the way, what they're meaning by that is the fact that if you are hedging in the markets with a huge amount of Bitcoin, like the execution of that contract itself could move the Bitcoin price. So just you trying to hedge against the price move could make the price move. And that's exactly what, like, we're kind of getting at, is that when you want to do these big transactions, particularly in something that's volatile like Bitcoin and that's global, and there's not a whole lot, you can't close the markets down. There's no like, we get a second to breathe and, you know, maybe the price won't trade in, you know, the next 3 seconds. Like, it just doesn't. It's always running. It's always accessible. And because of that, you have to be able to hedge against it. And that's exactly why one of these things, like we've talked about Strike so much on the show, because I love it. And I think it's a window into the future of this thing, like what we're actually going to see develop and how it's using US dollars. The product is a payment system. It just runs on Bitcoin, but the user itself is just using dollars like they always have. That is how you break into the mainstream. They will realize, as time goes, the investment value of Bitcoin, but to be able to use it as a settlement network, to get instant settlement, to get low-cost settlement, to get a perfectly compatible and widespread settlement. That's the potential of this of protocol. That's the potential of having this truly replace our retail, global retail payments infrastructure. with a LNP BP stack, a Bitcoin and Lightning protocol, plus probably a numerous other second layer protocols and maybe even third layer protocols. There's a lot of different development happening in this way. And therein lies something that's a huge benefit to explicitly these sorts of networks. Having an open permissionless one is that people could just build and expand and add new features all the time. But again, this article, what I was actually trying to get to, was that this article is just a cost-benefit analysis. What does it cost to settle on Lightning? What's the time cost to settling on Bitcoin? And how does that compare to the current system? This doesn't really, outside of just like kind of a brief mentioning, doesn't really get into the fact that it's also far more private and will have access to so many more features and dynamic capabilities and security offerings that no one else, nothing in the hierarchical legacy system could even come close to providing. And that is going to be some of the most exciting things, aside from the fact that you could literally replace the entire global payments infrastructure, retail payments infrastructure, with exactly this technology. And the fact that they're building on this thing, and to hear them say it's ready today to actually do this, is just really, really exciting to see someone building on it see how close we are to that point. It's just a mechanism or a problem of building out the liquidity, building out the channels, establishing the position, and being accessible to the user market and figuring out the UX design, like building a product on it. That's it. That's where we are. The infrastructure and the protocols are there. What we need is a product, a front-facing product, and users. And that's where something like Strike, I think, is a huge, huge step forward to just simplifying the entire experience. He does that quote from Jack, that tweet. I mean, we know Jack has been, or Square, the company, has been working with Lightning. They've been funding Lightning. They've got the Lightning, the user experience or the development team that they've been working with. They've been working with Lightning Labs since 2018. And we know that they are deeply invested in this time and resource wise. And that is not something to just dismiss. When people say Lightning is, a lost cause or something, it's got to be A, somebody who is not paying attention in the least, and B, somebody who's never used it. For instance, I just had my brother, I finally got my brother on it, and he's using Breeze, and I think he had Wallet of Satoshi, I think, the custodial one mentioned in here, I think was something that he used a little bit of. Or maybe he actually used Strike, I can't remember. He's starting to play with these apps, and he just paid me back for sharing cost for BitBlock Boom, because we're going to the conference he's now coming with, and he paid me back over Lightning, and I've been using it constantly for Fold, just to try out all the apps. I've got my Zap connected to my BTC Pay server, and there is still a lot of complexity. There is still a lot of headaches in the user experience for some of these things, but for a handful of them, they're unbelievably clean and simple. They're still missing certain functionality in the fact that they are the stuff that really, really works is the most basic stuff, but it's spreading incredibly quickly and it's moving very, very fast, and there are thousands of developers working on this now. And just one of the things that he pointed out that I thought that they pointed out in this article that I thought was fascinating was about how Visa has still relies on a messaging system that was built in the 80s, that was defined in the 80s. And because there are so few people who actually know anything about this standard, it actually creates a huge cost barrier to accessing the network. But that this is good for Visa, that companies actually use this as barriers for their monopoly to actually pointlessly, well, not pointlessly, good for them in the sense of, you know, controlling a market, but to create that walled garden, to attempt to prevent others from getting in that space because of incompatibility. Like, they're specifically trying to defend their market position, and having something that's incredibly stupid, difficult, and has a very low knowledge base for working with is a benefit for them. But to compare that to LND, to Lightning and C Lightning, like a REST API or gRPC, these things are dirt simple. Developers just out the gate can pretty easily work with these things. Millions already know how to operate these systems. Like, it's not very difficult. In fact, that's how you connect. The basic, like, that's how I've got my Zap, and that's how I've got like four wallets connected to my BTC Pay server. I've got a Jewel Lightning extension on my main computer and on my my laptop, and then I have a Zap on my phone, and I have another one somewhere else. What's the other one I can't think of at the moment? Oh wait, no, it's just my fully noted app. It's not a wallet. Okay, yeah, so those are the three wallets that are connected to it. But it's in very, very simple, very common means of communication. You know, just REST API, super simple. And that this code is free and open source, that this is just available to work with, that you can look and see all of the things that are actually capable with it. It's completely permissionless. There's no approval for a bank. From a bank. There's no network provider. There's no barrier whatsoever. You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to get any other code anywhere. It's all freely available online. You can build a proof of concept. You can launch a product entirely by yourself just by connecting to GitHub, looking at it, and building your own tools. We're talking about a financial system, an entire global financial retail payment system, with that low of a barrier to entry. You think that giant walled garden of Visa with an 80s defined communication standard is going to stop that? Is going to be any kind of a serious competitor to that network after 3 or 4 years of development? Not at all, in my opinion. It's like if I am IBM, like in the early days, literally tried to host and create their own version of every website that happened on the internet. Like imagine if the internet was entirely curated, or someone attempted to curate the entirety of the internet within one company, and hired employees to make all of the websites that you could possibly need or be interested in. That obviously sounds ridiculous. And I think that's the comparison. I think that's what we will see. That's how ridiculous the comparison will be in 10 years, to think that Bitcoin and Lightning Network could not have competed with something like Visa or Venmo or some other closed walled garden of a payment system. But it also brings to attention, and this is something I actually really appreciated about this article, is kind of this still won't even be non-custodial, still could potentially not be there for the unbanked or the underbanked. That this is still not a so low cost as to be invisible system. And there's not really much of a way around that. And that most people will be using it as services, but I think you need to... This is one of those things that I've had a hard time. You know, you've got that cypherpunk dream of everybody running their own node and everybody being their own bank and all of this stuff. But I think when it's really a bad habit to get caught in some utopian dream when we have something that can destroy 98.5% of the current barrier and the current restrictions and the current controls. Because that 1.5% would just be really nice to have, to risk the rest of it, is to not lose sight of reality. And that's that there are always security trade-offs to these things. There is settlement trade-off to Bitcoin. That's why we had this huge block size debate, and we had this big fight over it for, you know, for some, at least 4 years. I mean, it was ridiculous. Like, everybody knows that trade-off. Everybody knows how contentious that got at multiple points. And I think it's also something to remember that most people don't want that personal responsibility. Just like most people aren't going to run their own website, most people are just going to use some other custodial service. But if you lower the barrier to creating a market for that service, if you make that as low as possible, if you make that entirely global, where they don't have to be limited to their jurisdiction or to some company that is, you know, under the thumb of a dictator, but they can pick any company in the world to use, and all they have to do is be able to connect to it, that they actually gain their privacy back, that this is actually compatible with all of the global payments infrastructure around the world, and that at the base of it, you can settle it in the most sound currency that has ever existed. You don't just pass that off as like unimportant or not good enough because all transactions aren't just 100% free. Just the simple fact of what I just described is one of the most revolutionary technology shifts that we have ever seen, and it's going to get more efficient and be more capable every single year for the next 10 years. And we really don't know what the future holds. Right now, it does look like this would be something where this is a business payments global infrastructure for a financial system. And that most people will not, a majority of people will not be running their own node. A majority of people will just use some other service and potentially won't even hold their own keys. Maybe they'll hold a part of a key, or they'll hold a, you know, one key in a 2 of 3 or something in a multi-sig channel or something. Who knows what kind of a setup there will be. But that's right now. That's with our current state. That's with looking at the current limitations and the current costs and how much it can actually manage. That Bitcoin is not only incredibly close to what the Fedwire system can, like the throughput of the Fedwire system, that it's getting closer and could very well surpass it because of the increased efficiency and the innovation that is able to happen on Bitcoin that can't happen on the Fedwire system, or just doesn't. If you look at the chart, it's been getting closer and closer to, I mean, it's incredibly close to the number of transactions that the Fedwire does. Just simple case in point. But obviously the barrier to actually utilizing that is massive. You have to get a banking license. You might as well just say, you know, you have to get in a hot air balloon and go around the world for most people. A banking license is ridiculously cost and resource prohibitive. But imagine a global market, censorship resistant, that actually maintains people's privacy, and where all you need is an internet connection and you can use any business in the world, and anybody can be your payment provider, and all it costs is the cost to become a part of the Bitcoin network, to do a Bitcoin transaction, to open up a Lightning channel. That is the new cost. And just like the majority of the world is not going to host their own website and provide their own service, most people aren't going to host their own node and have a bunch of Lightning channels. But it does make very good sense that communities might do it together, that friend groups might do it together, that small businesses might get together in some town, that local municipalities might work on it. Just like some will host their own ISP and offer fiber to, like, the, like there's a lot of companies, or there's a lot of small communities and stuff that have set up their own fiber networks because the big networks completely failed to do so, and they raise money for themselves. They build their own ISP in their local area, and they run and manage it on a pseudo, like a little collective basis. They build their own infrastructure, and this is something that could easily be done. Not only easily, but is incredibly cost effective, and is a huge improvement to decentralization in the finance. In the world of finance and banking, that is It's not a baby. This is not a baby step. This is not two or three steps. This is a generational leap. This is on the order of a human being stepping on the moon for the equivalent of financial independence and freedom across the globe, and to create a single compatible global market where we can depend and cooperate and benefit from each other, rather than constantly being at odds through competitive nation states and ridiculous bureaucracy and nonsensical financial and capital controls around the globe because of a hierarchical system that gets used more to control people and to put up barriers rather than to provide people a service and to break down barriers. That is what we are doing. We are moving from a system that builds barriers and uses it as control to one that will break down barriers everywhere and will be used as a tool for financial independence and freedom. And that is not something to take lightly. And at the same time, it helps break down a lot of the barriers that have supported the re-centralization of the internet. The centralization of finance is actually a major part of what makes it incredibly difficult and or impossible to fund decentralized networks. If you have to rely, remember, this is a key element in Bitcoin and architectural thinking in like how the network works, is that the greatest amount of decentralization you can get in the system is the decentralization of the base layer. So if you don't have an easy way, if you have all these closed off walled garden payment systems with huge transaction fees, there's no way to fund like a micropayments decentralized server network. Like, it becomes incredibly difficult and or only possible by volunteer with something like IPFS or the Tor network. You just hope that there's enough incentive there for people to host and be a part of the network to keep it alive. But after 4 to 5 years of development in Lightning and a new infrastructure for global payment systems, and to get back that permissionlessness for innovation, to get back the censorship resistance of payments, and to gain privacy in that system, and to be able to do something like micropayments, to get all of that back will completely redefine the foundation on which those other systems are even possible. So things that literally just made no sense and could never be financially sustainable 4 or 5 years ago, in another 4 or 5 years, will have an entirely different reality to build off of. And I think these things will suddenly be possible in a way that we had never thought of them before. And you can tell I'm super excited about this. And I think this is a great article and kind of not only a super bullish and great vision for the future, but also a bit of a sober one, it will always be open. Like, I think this system, both Bitcoin and Lightning, will always be open to those who want to learn about it and who want to tinker and who go that extra mile to get their independence and build their own systems, maybe even their own service for other people. But I think it's just kind of the state of the world that, you know, like, money is about specialization, and not everybody is going to, the whole world isn't going to specialize in maintaining their own money, maintaining their own financial security, and running their own payment system. It's just not how the economy works. We lean on each other all the time for our specialties, and there's just not enough time in the world for people to be incredibly good at whatever their profession is, and also know and learn all the ins and outs of running a part of the global payments infrastructure. That said, we have no idea what it's going to look like in 10 years. None. With the possibility of Taproot and Schnorr cross-input aggregation on the horizon after, you know, subsequently after Taproot got activated on the network, with multiple new avenues and technologies that could be used for Lightning Network to improve it, make it way more efficient, make it much lower risk, like L2 and the quote-unquote no input class, which we have read a couple of pieces by, probably the best one by Aaron Van Vierdum on Bitcoin Magazine. In fact, I'll link to that if you want to dig a little bit into that. But there's so many technologies and other ways to utilize these things already on the horizon. We just have no idea how quickly and in how many different ways we can continue to lower these barriers, continue to lower these costs, and make this accessible to everyone. And I still think the end goal is that ridiculously utopian cypherpunk dream. And, you know, utopia means literally like a place that doesn't exist. And I think it's not that. I think it's something that can exist, and it very well might, with an open permissionless network, to make this as simple as possible and to continue to innovate in a permissionless way. I truly think that future is still ahead of us. I think it's still possible. And regardless, where we are headed is so many orders of magnitude better than what we have now. There's absolutely no reason to not steam, to go full steam ahead as hard as we can, because this is amazing technology and it's going to do so much good for the world. So I'm excited about part two of this. This again was from Galloy Money. I will have links so that you can follow Nicholas and Chris on Twitter and other social media. And that will do it. Don't forget to stack responsibly. Do not just go FOMO in with Bitcoin. Like I said, volatility is coming back and it's very, very exciting. And, you know, I'm glad, but don't forget to just calmly dollar cost average. That is the best and surest way to make sure that you have a strong position in Bitcoin in the future. That and the best way to do that with, and you know, get that $10 free. Don't possibly leave that on the table. You can do that at swanbitcoin.com/guy. And of course, you help out the show. You let them know that we're helping to build that HODL floor of everybody who is constantly buying Bitcoin and putting that upward pressure. So with that, thank you so much for listening. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible, bringing the best of Bitcoin to you in audio so that you can learn everything there is to know about this crazy new world that we are heading into. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, take it easy, guys.